October 13, Chadwick Boseman and Sterling K. Brown in Marshall, based on a true story.
I'm Thurgood Marshall. I only represent people accused because of race.
Before he became the first African-American Supreme Court justice.
Did you do what they said you did?
He attacked me!
I never touched that woman.
Thurgood Marshall was a man on a mission.
The only way to get through a bigot's door is to break it down.
Critics rave Marshall is outstanding. 4 stars. One of the best movies of the year. Marshall, rated PG-13, in theaters October 13. Maybe inappropriate for children under 13.
Welcome, movie fans, to the Popcorn Talk Network's Anatomy of a Movie, where we are made in America. And tonight, we are going to be talking about American Made, so stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Why, hello movie fans, how are you? This is Dimitri at DMovies1701. You can support me on Twitter. And yes, as we opened up, we're going to be talking American Made, along with my Made in America co-host, Marissa Sarafini.
Actually, it was not Made in America, but hello everyone, yes.
Get into the spirit of
things. I'm back. Yeah, no.
And she wanted to open up with
I was like, the song. I literally, as the intro is rolling, I was like, we should have played America from West Side Story.
Yeah.
Because I think that would have applied very well to this
absolutely.
One. It just came to me.
It just cracked me up.
Shoot,
it came out of nowhere.
Missed opportunity. Maybe we can end on that song.
No, it's not in the movie. We can't. We're not talking West Side Story. Yeah, it matters. It matters, damn it. So, folks, yes, we are talking about Tom Cruise's latest opus, his pairing again with director Doug Liman after Edge of Tomorrow.
Great film.
And I got to say that these two seem to work very well. They're simpatico is a good way to put it. So as we start off every segment of Anatomy of a Movie, we always talk opinion. And again, folks, we are very spoiler rich. So spoiler alert, if you're watching along, please feel free to comment. We'll try our best to maybe even shout you out. And so watch along with us and hopefully you feel the same way. Or if there's something you want to bring up and talk about American Made, we would love to try to broach your subject. So why don't we start off with opinion? Marissa,
this wasn't a bad film. I overall enjoyed it. It got repetitive at a lot of moments because I can't count how many times he was flying back and forth and how many different aviation vehicles he had to fly, which is pretty cool. And it's always nice to see Tom Cruise doing his thing. And I felt it was very like, oh man, this is just an older version of Maverick, in a way. But I enjoyed it because everyone loved Maverick, and we know Tom Cruise has that charisma and personality to like be a likable guy who could pull something off such as this. And I thought it was actually very believable, knowing that's based on a true story, based on a real person. That I appreciated that. I'm not, admittedly, I wasn't really alive in the 80s, so I'm not fully aware of all the life events that he was actually tied to.
Uh-huh.
Like, I know what they are, but I didn't realize, like, how deep his involvement is with everything, and I thought that was actually a pretty interesting aspect of these stories and historical events that happened in the country that I didn't know of.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, based on a true story movie, to me, this is where the truth, to me, was far crazier than the movie's fiction. You know, and Tom Cruise, as you said, is back. He's back in the pilot seat. Not necessarily for me. It wasn't necessarily as Maverick, but as a mule. He was a drug mule. He was a mule for the U.S. government. He was a mule for the cartels, and he was a mule for the Contras.
Yeah.
He was a transportation. He was a mule, and you know, it embellishes certain plot points as so often these movies do. We talked a lot about these movies, right? And how they'll change various certain things, and we're going to get into truth versus fiction, you know, I think it really captured the socio-political mayhem of the 80s. And I thought that the screenwriter, Gary Spinelli, he brought this Sunset Boulevard narrative approach, and it worked well, I think, in this vehicle. And director Doug Liman showcases all of the bedlam going on, but yet he has the task of showcasing Bedlam, but he kept the movie grounded, where you can believe, you know, you're able to believe this is actually what's going on. Right. And I really like that. And Tom Cruise, I thought this was one of his best performances in years, maybe since Edge of Tomorrow. Far better than The Mummy. As you brought up
before, I said that before.
You know, and then again, we've talked about this gentleman many a time. Domhnall Gleeson. Yet another fresh performance from this guy. And, you know, he's the CIA operative. He's like the car salesman with a don't F with me attitude. And he's able to make being drafted into indentured servitude as if it was a choice, not a command. I mean, his charisma matched Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to do when you're going up against Tom Cruise. Sarah Wright as Barry's wife. She plays her part with a veiled ignorance. And I thought she was really good. We'll go into more of her.
Thoughts about that.
She's along for the trip and she stands by her man, whether on the ground or in zero G. We'll talk about that. Yeah. And, you know, listen, to me, don't let American Maid's entertaining romp fool you. I really was very surprised as to these events that are detailed in the movie. I did grow up in the 80s. I know of the Iran-Contra affair and Oliver North, but I didn't know this part of the story.
Exactly.
And this part of the story it's a linchpin. It started it all. This one man started it all. That, to me, I found to be, when I walked out, I was like, okay, I learned something, and holy cow, who knew this one guy? So
he was a
catalyst is a great word, you know. So Barry Seal, but the other thing we'll talk about too is Barry Seal. He was not only American made; he was American played, and we'll talk about, you know, various how they talk about the movie and about Barry Seal. Was he really a willing participant? Or was he sort of kind of? You got no choice, boy. You're going to do this.
In the movie or so, in real life?
Right. So why don't we start talking a little bit about the production? Because it is I found it to be a very fascinating road to the silver screen.
Yeah, I mean, it's based on the real Barry Seal, who I had no idea who he is and his involvement. And he was actually, so the real Barry Seal was an action junkie. He loved the adrenaline. But at such a young age, at 15, he always had this, like, knack for aviation. And he started, piloting airplanes and stuff. And he actually got his license. He was so good, he got his pilot's license at 16. And then there was actually a moment where his teacher let him fly a plane all by himself just within, like, 90 minutes. He was that good.
Yeah.
He was, like, so...
That's crazy.
So naturally gifted when it came to flying. And, you know, he just grew up flying all these, you know, bus transportation vehicles in the sky. And he eventually landed. He was the youngest TWA pilot.
Pilot, yeah.
He was that good.
Uh-huh. Yeah, which is crazy. And so apparently a lot of this began in 2012. So correct me if I'm wrong. My math, 5 years? Right, 2017, right?
Yeah, five years.
Okay. Didn't even need my hands to do
You're
that.
You're asking an art major to do math. Not a good idea.
So the writer Gary Spinelli was talking to producer Doug Davidson at Quadrant Pictures. And he was doing a pitch meeting. And nothing was really sticking, according to Doug Davidson. And just as Spinelli was leaving, he mentioned one concept that he'd been trying to parse out. And apparently Spinelli was very influenced by the movie Argo. And another based on a true story,
right.
CIA event. Really good movie.
Good plane scene during that
movie as well.
Great
plane scene, yep. And he was like, wow, what if I could do an Argo-esque kind of a story that nobody knows, but equally as entertaining and thrilling? And he had come across Barry Seal, and that was pretty much it. Doug Davidson said, wow, that sounds like a great story. Let's start working on that. And So that was the genesis of this. Argo was the inspiration for this movie, which I think is pretty cool. So a writer was using his experience and love of movies to come up with something else. So Spinelli was fascinated by the fact that SEAL's life in the late 70s and early to mid 80s, he got away with illegal exploits for like years. Mm-hmm. Like years when you think about it.
He's just warming up, you know.
Living the high hog. Another movie, which I don't think you'll be surprised that was an inspiration to Spinelli, when you think about he's been getting away with these illegal activities, is Goodfellas. And he was on the hunt to find a version that, when he found American Made, he thought that that was a little hidden piece of history, and true. Mm-hmm. I mean, such a hidden piece of history. You know, again, growing up during that time, Marissa, I paid attention to the news, but I was paying more attention to movies. But you knew what was going on with Iran-Contra. Yeah. And I knew the surrounding players, but I never once can recall ever hearing about Barry Seal. So this was a hidden piece of fascinating history. So, you know, he got into how intricately Seal was involved in the government, double dealings with Colombians, and the cartels, and he had an inordinate role in a scandal that shadowed Ronald Reagan's 8 years in office. One man. That to me, listen, if you're a history buff, you may already know that, but if you're not a history buff, this is a really cool movie because it's entertaining, but you realize, holy crap, all this happened because of this? So.
Right. And like, this man was involved in a lot of things. I've read a good article, I don't remember like who, so I can't give proper credit to.
Yeah.
But someone compared this movie to, or they compared Barry Seal in this film as the Forrest Gump, the person who like interacted with so many famous people and was involved in so many famous events, but you don't really know who he is. And I feel like I think that was a great metaphor for Barry Seal because he is that person in this movie.
Yeah, his story intersected with so many things.
So many influential people.
And speaking of intersection, too. So when it comes time, they're setting it up. Who do we pick? And connections. So they, Doug Liman, who is in his own right a really good director, but he too has a special connection to the story. He didn't know Barry Seal, but his father prosecuted Oliver North, was on that team, which to me is like crazy. So when he started research, he goes, wait a minute, I know this. When he was looking, this is Iran-Contra. It's like, oh, I have to do the movie. And obviously he and Tom Cruise, who got along really well together on Edge of Tomorrow, they'd been looking for another project to do, and both of them agreed. And they were like, in. They said, yeah, done. This is going to be, this should be great. And Doug Liman, who refers to the film as, catch this, a fun lie based on a true story. I love that. A fun lie based on a true story. And
it's a good description for
it. Yeah. Yeah, so Doug Liman's father, Arthur Liman, was the chief counsel for the Senate investigation into the Iran-Contra affair and had actually questioned Oliver North during the hearings.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been funny if he had used, at the end of the movie, you saw that they showed clips of Oliver North being questioned, if that was his dad questioning.
Yeah.
You know, as an homage, so to speak. So, I thought that that was really cool. And they got involved, and they sort of kind of changed the script around, where they made it, instead of it looking more like a documentary, they made it look more like a movie. And they threw in all these, well, the flying stuff, as you talk about. They made it in the framing device, which I said it was very Sunset Boulevard-ish, because the movie is being narrated by, essentially, a dead man. At this point, through videotape, he's a dead man. And I just found that to be a really cool device, that it's not done so often where it's cliche, but if you recognize it, you go, well played. That was, I thought it was very well
done.
You don't
realize the narration is told through a secondary source.
Right.
Compared to the actual real person.
You know, yeah. And I thought that that was really well done. And then they built up some of the mayhem that was going on around that. Of course, Tom Cruise had his pilot's license.
Yeah,
he's so, a pilot. And
he did all of his own flying in this film.
Okay, catch this. Including flying that size plane to Colombia. Oh, we have some people who are commenting. I can't. Yo, you don't have your laptop today. And my glasses aren't that good. We will get to you, I promise. Because it's, I just
Jonas
love
Tiger says it's nice to have two Tom Cruise movies in one year. It's a very rare thing.
He works a lot, you know. Yeah. I mean, he'll take some time off.
He has like the one big movie every year.
Right.
And that's about it. So, yeah.
It's, you know, it's good to see Tom Cruise. And we'll talk about his performance, so stick around. But I want to talk a little bit about his flying because apparently they really didn't give a timeline. It takes, from where he was flying from, it takes about 10 hours to fly to Colombia, okay? And this guy, Barry Sears, was doing it with no fuel stops. Tom Cruise took the same routes. Mm-hmm. And Doug Liman said, no, I flew Delta. He's like,
yeah, like, nope.
No, you have at it, Tom.
And like, Tom is like being the crazy method actor, he would be like, he would take those exact same routes on how Barry Seal actually did, going around all the necessary places and ports and checkpoints.
And let's touch a little bit upon his performance, because when he was in the air, I got the sense that he was actually having fun.
I got the sense he was actually flying.
Right? Yeah, well, I got like, that too. But I had a sense that he was like having a good time, mm-hmm. you know? And that to me, we talk about this all the time. Like, you can sense when people are enjoying what they're doing. Sometimes it can hinder a movie because they're having so much fun that they forget to make a good movie. But when they make a good movie, that really comes through. And I really did get the sense that from a collaborative effort, that everybody was enjoying to be on set. They enjoyed showing up to work. They enjoyed playing their part. Mm-hmm. So much so that, did you know that Spinelli and Cruz, Cruz and Lyman, Spinelli lives.
They were roommates for a short minute.
So Spinelli shared a house with them while the production was on location in Georgia. Spinelli drew up like a chore chart because I believe it was his house. That he said, come on over, and here's a chore chart to handle housekeeping.
You may be Tom Cruise, but you still have to do your part.
Yeah, I think that's great. And when you talk about camaraderie, that's when you can tell, too, where all the pieces of that puzzle are coming together. And I think creatively, it comes out and it shows. Mm-hmm. So, I can't read anything else sticking. Yes, sticking around. Well, thanks. So. Jonas, obviously, you are a Tom Cruise fan if you look forward to two movies of his a year. So what did you think of The Mummy, though? Right? Because this is definitely, to me, this shows, American Made shows that Tom Cruise is an actor. He can act. And it wasn't his typical cocky kind of, it wasn't just all charm and charisma in Mission Impossible Ethan Hunt.
Right.
I felt that this was more of, he was a risk taker, but I believed him in this. I believed that he could get the job done. And one of my favorite scenes is when he's at the cartel and he's doing the math calculations about taking off and he's checking out the plane and there's that
the big guy in the plane. The overweight man.
And he's like, what the hell is he doing here? Oh, he's security. He goes, I either fly him or I fly the drugs. Which one is it?
And or the product.
That was a good scene, right?
That was a great moment.
And it's believable because Tom Cruise, too, is able to pull that off.
I feel so bad for the guy when he was just, like, walking away. I'm like, aw. But I did like that because I think that was, like, a big key moment that showed, like, that just who they're now dealing with, that he is serious. He'll do the work, but he has to set his own terms and standards.
Yeah, and, you know, he goes on, Cruise himself says, I don't make a movie just to make a movie. What interests me is the passion of cinema and storytelling, and that's when it gets exciting. And it's not just a job. And for him to have so many years at this and doing this, and he's crossed paths with Scorsese, Paul Newman, who got him into driving. He's worked with Tony Scott. He's worked with some amazing... He's worked with Steven Spielberg. He's had this amazing career. He's had some major hits. He's had some misses. But man, oh, Manischewitz, the longevity this guy has had is quite a testament. And people, I think, still like him. Like Jason Tiger. Not the biggest Cruz fan.
Jonas Tiger.
Tiger, I apologize. I'm having a hard time seeing. There's a glare.
It's okay.
Cruz fan, but I do look forward to his movies. And I think that's of a lot of people. I think a lot of people enjoy his presence on screen, particularly if he's a Jack Reacher, or if he's Ethan Hunt, or if he's Barry. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people enjoy... Like, what are your thoughts on his performance in this movie?
I thought Tom was great. Like I said earlier, I felt like this was a very... He did a very believable portrayal of this guy who is put in all these situations, but still being the gringo that delivers.
Right.
But watching it, there were moments where I was like, Tom Cruise is just now just having fun. There was really no creative or... There was no restrictions or limitations on him as a person. And it got to the point where he wasn't acting. He was just being himself.
Yeah.
And it did actually take me out of the film. I was like, Tom's just doing this now. They're just letting him do whatever the hell he wants.
You think, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I wanted
not that
to
it
bring
was
that
bad,
up.
But there were just moments I was like, I'm watching Tom Cruise. I'm not watching Barry Seal.
Well, I wanted to ask, because I wanted to ask this into our audience as well, because Tom Cruise... particularly The Mummy, and we talked about it on our panel for The Mummy, he gets accused a lot of taking over a production.
Cruise control.
Right. And I'm not saying that he didn't do it in this movie, but to me, in this movie, it seemed less evident. Like, he gave his other supporting cast limelight, and he didn't take away from it. And... unlike, say, The Mummy, which I think the arguments could be valid to an extent, it wasn't as evident in American Made.
Yeah. And also the thing about Mummy, that's a part of a universe. We know there's going to be following movies for that. And it's also based on, a story. It's an adaptation, which has been translated in so many different ways and shown in so many different times that has more creative liberties to that type of thing. So you can understand why Tom Cruise would be more creative and change a lot of things for The Mummy.
Absolutely.
Compared to this, when it's just about a person and real life events that you like that happened not that long ago.
No.
In America's eyes, there are things that you're going to have to be historically accurate.
Sure.
And you can't do those creative liberties. Yeah, they changed some aspects of this film, but they didn't change the outcome of what happened.
And you can't. And we're going to talk about one of those characters that was made up for this movie. But before we get into his role, let's talk a little bit about Sarah Wright. Who is Lucy Seale, the wife.
Yeah.
Now, it was said that she's completely inhabited the role. She was funny, warm, genuine, and she got along together with Tom Cruise very well. Doug Liman was instantly impressed by her spirit, and I get that. Here is my thing, and I'm not disparaging her. For some reason, throughout the entire movie, I could not get Alice Eve out of my head. Mm-hmm. Alice Eve from Star Trek Into Darkness. They look, to me anyways, they looked extremely similar. I don't know, Anthony. Anthony's on the boards. I don't know if you can find a picture of Alice Eve, but I couldn't get her out of my head.
Okay.
And I'm like, did you try to get Alice Eve and you couldn't do it? So here's where we go with. Or I just, is that Alice Eve? No, it's not Alice Eve, because it wasn't until after I was paying attention to the credits.
Mm.
I thought Sarah did a good job, and she has to be, Barry's wife. So she can't, if you don't have a good actress, that actress just gets shrouded under the personality that is Barry. I thought she did an okay job in standing up to him, particularly when they made that move. But again, I just couldn't get Alice Eve out of my head. What did you think of Sarah?
I mean, I liked Sarah, right? I think she was good. I liked the fact that she was the loyal wife and who was put in all these situations. But I was also very bothered just by this portrayal of this relationship.
What was it? What was it that?
Well, I always have the problem of Hollywood and the age difference when you're matching up a relationship. And I've said it multiple times, where, I mean, we have Tom Cruise, 55. We have Sarah Wright, who's 34. There's a 20-year age difference. It's visibly obvious
on I will give you that.
The movie. And I'm like, oh, great. Sarah, she's great. She's a good actress. She was very strong. I like the role. I like the person that she played. There's nothing wrong with Sarah. It's just the fact of what is happening is that it's another age difference of pairing. It's like you couldn't find another strong actor or another strong actress to pair against Tom Cruise who might be more believable as a wife who's going through this.
Yeah, I mean, I get your
point. Why the 20-year difference again?
My only thing to that would be the character of Barry Seal would seem to go for a younger woman. Like, I'm not, and we're going to go into the fact and fiction of this. That's the only rationale that I can have, because I do agree with you. It was visible. Like, it
was so visible. The age difference is it was so obvious, it bothered me.
It was obvious. And you said she's 34?
She's 34 in real life.
And I would have pegged her to be 28.
Exactly.
She looks younger.
Exactly. And I think that's also the bigger issue. It's like she looks 30 years younger than Tom Cruise. Yeah. I looked up her age. She is, you know. I mean, and there are real life relationships where people are like, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen. It does happen all the effing time. Is that, sorry, I'm getting really passionate about this. But like the age difference, this is always a recurring issue with me personally. Watching age differences where we could have picked another stronger actress to be paired up with Tom Cruise. That'd be more believable.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that 100%. I really don't. I think it's a valid point. I'm surprised that she's 34. I mean, good for her for appearing younger, but in this movie, it was very, very visible. And I thought that they were purposely going for the younger woman. And that's why, I don't know, I guess Anthony wasn't able to find a picture of Alice Eve, who is a very strong actress, but they look so similar to me that I was like, holy cow, but Alice Eve doesn't look that young. Like, this girl is young.
I have a challenge.
What's the challenge? Who are you throwing this out to?
This will be to Anthony, to you. So we actually have to take a quick commercial break because we have to tell our fun fans about a great new movie that's coming out. But while that's playing, Anthony can find this picture of Alice.
That's a great thing.
We have a spot. We're going to tell you good things about this new upcoming movie that you need to know.
Oh my God. Okay. Let's do it. Somebody's paying commercials for us.
Let's do it.
Do it. That's a great picture. I can't hear anything. Are we on?
Go to the slate.
Go to slate. I think I know what the movie might be.
Yes.
Are we talking about Marshall?
Marshall.
Marshall.
Yes.
Yeah, we just talked to Chadwick Boseman. It's got like a bazillion, a cast of characters.
He's an amazing actor.
The reviews on the movie have been phenomenal. About the first African-American lawyer, I forget what case. He's Thurgood Marshall.
Thurgood Marshall.
And
if you guys don't know who Thurgood Marshall is, he was an amazing lawyer who dealt with a lot of civil rights cases. From the 60s to the 80s, he was very prevalent in the lawyers, and they called him Mr. Civil Rights because he worked on like 30 plus cases that helped deal with civil rights movements and help progress America forward.
And folks, catch this cast. I mean, you guys are movie fans, so tell me if any of these names sound familiar to you. Maybe you've seen them. We said Chadwick Boseman. We said Josh Gad. Have you ever heard of him before?
He's amazing.
How about Kate Hudson? Do you like her?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sterling Kane Brown. Dan Stevens. You ever hear of him? How about James Cromwell? Ever heard of that guy
before?
How
have you not seen this movie already? It sounds so good.
So this has an amazing cast, and what is being said about it is that it could potentially be the first movie of 2017 that will actually have you stand up and cheer. I mean, look, I've said this many times before, folks. In today's days and times and everything going on, we need inspirational, feel-good movies. And Marshall is just the movie that could potentially do it. It's PG-13. And being that it is based on a true story, it's a biopic that's very entertaining, you shouldn't be afraid to take your kids to it. Because they'll come away, who knows, maybe they'll be better kids.
I hope so. Yeah.
And maybe they'll have an appreciation for these kind of movies too. And I just think that we need movies to cheer for. We need to get away from our current everyday things that are happening, social, political.
Sure.
And we need to be entertained for 2 hours. And if you can come out of a movie theater feeling good, that to me is a win. It's a win-win. So go see Marshall, folks. And you'll love it. You'll have a good time. And then, you know, you're going to talk to us about it.
I mean, the trailer looks fantastic. I can't wait to see it. Maybe we'll, hopefully we can talk about it on Anatomy
maybe
of a Movie.
We'll talk
so
about
go
it.
Check out Marshall. I'm
and
excited.
And in the meantime, I did see, Anthony, you had an amazing picture up of Alice Eve.
Yeah.
Now, can you see what I'm saying? How she sort of looks?
She's for those who are tuning into woman. iTunes, check out our YouTube. We have a picture pulled up for her.
Yeah, they do look she's alike. A very beautiful woman. She played Dr. Carol Marcus in Into Darkness. Okay. So she's a really good actress, but I don't want to take away from Sarah. But your points are extremely fair points, I think, all across the board. I felt similar. She's really young. I didn't think she was 34. I thought she was 20. I didn't know she was in her
30s. I would say she looks my age. And I'm young.
You are.
I'll say, I'm young, but I'm not young. I'm younger.
But you're mature.
Thank you.
You're wiser than your years.
Thank you.
We'll say that.
But it was just, such a visual problem for me. Yeah. I couldn't enjoy it.
Understood.
And it's not fair to the actress or just the story in itself, because we know the real Barry Seal was married three different times.
Yeah, three times.
But it was just, I saw it as in just another Hollywood problem that's still going on with this mismatch of age difference.
Right. No, I understand. And I get it. I mean, I saw it too. She at least had the chops to stand up to Cruise and not get buried by his charisma and Barry Seal's energy. Mm-hmm. I will give her that. And that she did a really good job. So let's move on to the other gentleman that we talked about, Domhnall Gleeson.
Again,
we've talked about him here. I've said he's a chameleon. He is an actor's actor.
Mm-hmm.
He can do comedy. He can do romantic comedy. He can do drama. He can be a villain. He can be likable. He can be hateable. In this movie, I thought he was fantastic. And since we're talking about this being a based on a true story movie, the interesting thing about his character was made for the movie. It was created.
Monty Schaefer.
Right, Monty Schaefer. And I didn't mind because on all accounts, it's not necessarily clear who recruited Barry Seal into the organization.
Into the CIA.
So they obviously, I think for storytelling purposes, you know, he's a gentleman that he's fictitious, but he didn't affect the outcome of the movie. We know that Barry Seal was recruited or brought into the service to fly and get pictures. We know all that. You just need a central character, you know, because it's sort of unclear as to who exactly it was.
Mm-hmm.
His role, I felt, was fantastic. I loved him in the trailers. Like, there's that scene when he was up top, he goes, "We're expanding, Barry." He was so good. But at the same time, when he's like, "All right, Barry, we're gonna have you do, all right, aside from pictures, you're gonna need to pick. And he's like, do I get a raise? It's like, and he just looked at him and goes, okay, Barry, so this is what we're gonna do. You didn't want to mess with him. Yeah. Even though he had...
Like, don't push him.
Right.
He's already given you a lot. Don't test the limits.
Yeah. So, that to me, because he had the charm and charisma of a car salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And once the deal's done, baby, deal's done.
It's done. You know?
You
have it.
But he had this great charisma. And to me, he's like a chameleon. And I just love watching this guy perform. In fact, I'd like to see him perform against Tom Cruise because I think they were really well. You're talking about two very uber charismatic guys on screen. And I think a pairing of these two again, I think it would be very beneficial to a movie.
Would be great. And you always liked Schaefer. He was a very likable guy. And also a very believable guy. And absolutely. I feel with someone like Tom Cruise, who's just such a big personality on screen, you have to get someone who can also equally match that.
Right.
And I think Domhnall did an amazing job of standing toe-to-toe with him when absolutely necessary.
Absolutely.
But also there were moments, don't test him.
And exactly. And you need a strong presence like that to believe that they can do that to an actor like Tom Cruise. And I think it's to Tom Cruise's testament to act like, oh, okay, boss. Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever you say. So that's why I really thought that pairing worked very well. I thought the casting in this movie for that part, he was fantastic. And particularly for a made-up role, which he really just jumped in. And he's just great. Every time I see this guy, he's so fun to watch. And this movie... You know, just made me even more of a fan. So
I love Domhnall.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Like every anatomy that we've covered that has Domhnall in it, I always say.
I was trying to think of what was the. It was the pretty good time travel. About Time.
Boom.
That's such a good movie.
It's such a good movie.
And it's on Anatomy of a Movie, but love he was so movie. Good and so likable. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing too. And he's Hux. In the Star Wars movie, so we'll be seeing him
so hateable in that again. Movie too.
And he was just in
Mother.
He was in Mother. He was in that movie.
That one.
And it's great. And he works. He's a working actor.
Yeah.
And he seems to enjoy his craft and he does very well at it. So I can't really point a finger to say
that's a very talented family.
Yeah. Well,
shoot.
He does.
I mean, he has a talented father, and his brother is also an actor. That's just, like, a talented family.
So, let's talk a little bit about the actual production of the movie.
Okay.
So, American made cast and crew of about 300-plus descend on ball ground for 5 weeks of their shooting schedule. This small community of 1,900 residents... is found in Cherokee country.
My town is smaller.
The foothills of the Appalachian Mountains as its unforgettable backdrop. The production shot in downtown Ball Ground, the Cherokee County Airport, which was also nearby. A lot of this was done. They turned Georgia into MENA circa 1981. And that to me, again, we talk about the collaborative process of movies and what it takes.
Movie magic.
I believed everything that they were telling me, you know, showing me. I believed it was late 70s, early 80s. I'll tell you, the one part that I just couldn't stop laughing at is when Sarah Lucy's brother, like, brother.
Oh, J.D.
Yeah, and he shows up.
Oh, I wanted to slap him.
Me too.
I wanted to punch him more so.
But he showed up in a gremlin car. I was like, okay, that's awesome. Like that just made me laugh because that is a perfect attention. The only thing that might have made me laugh as much is if he showed up in a Pacer, the all glass back trunk. So, you know, the production worked with the city officials as they always do and came up with a plan to change their quaint main street from semi-modern to retro. And it took 5 months from the initial phone call to the city officials to the first day of shooting. So the locals catch this sold T-shirts that said "Cruising into Ballground" and "Ballground, the movie capital of the world." These are stories too that I love, because not in every major town, like we're in Southern California. Mm-hmm. Not that we're tainted, but we see movies being shot on streets as we drive. And we're to the point where it's still cool, but on the other hand, it's like, you're fucking up my traffic. It's like, I gotta get home. It's like, this is causing major traffic jam. When a film production comes into a small town, they get it. When it's a Tom Cruise movie, they get it. And I think, also, it's a testament to Tom Cruise, because he could have shut that down. Selling "Cruising in the Ball," like, he could have been a jerk. It's like, guys... But he wasn't. I really like that. That town really got behind this, and that's a nice human interest story that you don't always hear about. You know, So
it's not every day where like small towns like this would get a Tom Cruise movie. So.
Exactly.
I mean, it puts them on the map.
Yeah.
And I like the stories of communities coming together for something artistic in that way.
Absolutely. So I like that. And they're having a good time doing it. And I'm sure the money went to the community for those shirts, and that's like so cool. You know, they had to give the streets an older look. So there was sand was spread in the sidewalks. Modern landscaping and signage was removed to replace with period fare. And they had to construct a ton of banks. Like facades. Because this is where Barry was
wandering. Small town every... you know, when every time he drove down the main street, quote unquote, like this, it reminded me of my hometown. My hometown's like that. We have bank, we have like all the small little mom and pop businesses that you need in a small town.
Yeah, and that's funny. And you know what the biggest challenge for the production people were? Their biggest challenge was making an addition to the downtown area. They had to get 26 payphones. installed for scenes where Seal makes and receives his phone calls. And that to me is like so funny, because the production searched far and wide for these, catch this, vintage beauties. And it took quite a while to find ones in nearly pristine condition to use.
And because they're not around anymore.
You know, I remember using payphones. Was it that long ago?
I remember using payphones.
Yeah, see? Yeah, I just find
I'm young, but I'm not that young.
I just think that was one of their biggest challenges, was putting up 26 payphones in the country, in that little town. So, and then they shot at the Cherokee Airport. That was a shooting destination. So, they were using actual hangars, the planes. They did everything from, you know, you saw a Miss Pac-Man machine to a Rubik's Cube. You know, I love all this.
The Rubik's Cube.
I love all this 80s nostalgia coming into movies. You know, it was done in It. I know you didn't see It, but we talked about that, because the first part of that movie takes place in the 80s. So the Cherokee Airport, too, also doubled for the last Brazil's airport tarmac in Managua, Nicaragua. So that was actually Cherokee.
So they redressed it.
Yeah, they just redressed it. Yeah, there we go. I didn't know the wiser.
No, but that's cool. That's that's movie magic. I mean, that's what we do.
Yeah, and that's really cool. You know, they took a Fine Foods in Decatur, which became the interior for the Waffle House. Has anybody eaten at a Waffle House before? Have you eaten at a Waffle House before?
I have. I come from like areas like that.
But they're not around here. No. So I had I've traveled this fine country for various jobs, so that's how I got to eat at a Waffle House. It's a Waffle House.
No, they're great. Yeah, I love Waffle Houses. We need them out here in LA.
I would say that and Cracker Barrels.
I love Cracker Barrels too. Yeah.
So
I come from the country, you guys. For anyone who don't know, I grew up in country-esque Illinois. Literally from the country.
So you understand what it takes when a film production thing comes in. So
Cherokee is basically my hometown.
The Atlanta airport, for a select few flying scenes, a flight simulator at the Delta Flight Museum was used. And it's the only simulator open to the public in the U.S., and many pilots head from flying in these simulators to piloting. And so,
And Tom and Doug Liman would use the simulator, you know, just to have fun and practice, which I thought was a neat bonding experience between the both of them.
Yeah, and they did stage work, obviously, in Norcross at the Atlanta Media Complex. Some renovated SEAL home interior scenes, including a Christmas morning scene with the family. Then they had, that was shot at a home on Rembrandt Street in Buckhead, neighborhood of Atlanta, where Liman, Cruz, and Spinelli shared their own location hotel, or home, actually, which is pretty cool. So I like the use of these small local places filmed in Atlanta. A lot of things are filming in Atlanta because of the taxes.
Yeah,
which, you know, it makes sense.
Great for them.
Of course. And if, you know, we're talking Hollywood magic. You redress it. I didn't even know that they were using that for Nicaragua. So I think that that's pretty cool. Let's see. I love waffles with whipped cream and Starburst jam. Is that from Waffle House?
Yes, Waffle House.
That's great. He's our biggest fan online with us right now. Yeah, I like
anything. I'm hungry for IHOP, but I completely digress.
Yeah, so now catch this. Now, in this little suburb of Atlanta, Mr. Gleason himself would venture in. He went to the vintage shops. There, and that's where he found his blue blazer, the blue blazer he wears in the movie. He actually found it in a vintage shop and said, hey, he got it approved by the costume department.
There you go. It works.
He gave to the community.
He did.
You got to respect that.
Yeah, he did.
So I love that. So trying to think where else we should talk a little bit too about the automobiles and planes. Well, we talked about the Gremlin, but I want to talk about some of the aircraft. So Liman and Cruz felt strongly about the airplanes that they were going to use in this movie. Being that Tom did all his flying in the movie, he even flew one of the airplanes to Columbia himself. And they're not big. The ones that he was flying, they're not big commercial planes. They're not meant for grand flying, and yet this kind of flying, that's a 10-hour flight in a teeny little plane. And Barry himself actually brought extra fuel and would fuel mid-air. And it said right here Tom made some fuel stops, but Liman, just like I said earlier, he just took Delta. 10 hours, that's a long
that think is a about long the time cockpit in the air.
Yeah. In that...
That's like going to Europe and then some.
I have a hard time driving to Vegas.
And that's a four-hour drive.
Yeah, yeah. So so Frederick North, he was the aerial coordinator. He's been in more than 100 films. And he says, this is a relatively new experience. He had the lead actor who had the skill set to actually fly. And Tom was well aware that Barry flew low. And he was ready to accept that challenge because there were many times,
right?
Whether you're
it's less, it takes less fuel to fly low for a long. You can be in the air longer.
Right.
And there was I really enjoyed that scene where they were out flying the actual government.
Yeah, and they would slow down, right? But I want to talk about the one flying scene that didn't happen. That actually was a scene for me while entertaining. It's sort of I was like, okay, I don't think that really happened. Maybe in the 80s they could have gotten away with it, but I'm talking about the airplane landing crash scene where he lands small scene in a neighborhood.
In a residential area.
And it's entertaining. It's exciting.
It's Hollywood.
It's Hollywood. And it was funny, he gets out because the coke that he was transporting explodes on him, so he comes out all white, and he crashes into a tree at a house, and he comes out and he's like, here's a lot of money for you, here's for your sister, oh, and this is for your bike, and oh, you never saw me, and he rides off on the small kid's bike. But then I was thinking, again, being in Southern California, we've had fictional pilots who are supposed to be star pilots, like, you know, Han Solo. Mm-hmm. Harrison Ford, who is a pilot, who's crashed his plane. And look how much news that made. Right. No investigation out. This made the news, but I'm like going, yeah, he just left like a ton of coke in that plane. Yeah. Like, that was the one scene where you sort of go, where's the investigation going on? And even though it made it into the local newspaper because...
Like, he would... I always felt in this movie he was, like, never really... There wasn't a lot of jeopardy for him. Right. He just kept getting away with it. And I'm like, okay, is he that good that people just really weren't on his tail? I mean, there were moments where the government were, quote-unquote, trying to catch up with him.
Right.
But I'm like, how many times did he outmaneuver people?
Yeah. He was flying like Maverick in a jet.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that because you're right. He initially gets his job because he is a good flyer. However, things that I've read about Barry is that he was a willing participant because he was that cowboy. He loved that adrenaline rush. And he was like, oh, I get to work for the CIA. Now, the way I sort of kind of, the way the movie, at least the way I interpreted the movie as presented, I felt that he really wasn't being given much of a choice. It was either you do this or else. When he was approached by CIA, he was transporting, smuggling Cuban cigars. Mm-hmm. He was told they had a file on him, but we have a proposition for you. So I'm like, well, geez, that doesn't sound like that's a willing okay. That's like, do this or...
It was more like blackmail.
Sort of, right? I mean, did you look at that any other way?
At first I thought it was more like blackmail. It was like, you have to do this because we have dirt on you.
Right.
But then when they were rewarding him with money and planes and an airway, I'm like, what are the stakes against him now?
Right.
If they keep giving him stuff.
And then I was thinking, yeah, they give him the airstrip. Yeah. They gave him all the land, which they were going to use, and that they sort of kind of knew they were going to use. Then he gets involved with the cartels. And he basically, the way it's portrayed in the movie, correct me if I'm wrong, the way I saw it was he got caught. They caught him taking pictures. They said, you're Barry Seal. You're the guy that takes all the pictures of our territory. And he's like, what? He goes, yeah. Well, we have a proposition for you. Mm-hmm. We need to get our drugs from point A to point B. How do you say no to Pablo Escobar? Especially after they know you're flying and taking pictures of their land and right. territory.
It's like you traffic our drugs or you die.
Right. So, again, willing participant or sort of kind of...
Okay. I mean, I can understand why you're saying that, but there were literally in those moments where, like, you do this for us... We're still going to reward you. They're mm-hmm. like, we're going to give you buku's amount of cash for every kilo that you
right.
you transfer. And that's why I'm like, okay, it's more just a deal with personal benefits.
Yeah,
and therefore,
yeah.
kind of took away the jeopardy of it.
Yeah, until towards the end.
Until the end.
But again, it's like, you either will do this for us, you'll be paid handsomely for it, or we kill you. Like,
right. I mean, but throughout the movie, I was never actually worried about him, like worried about his well-being, because he was so rich. He was doing so well in everything he's doing. His family, he was happy. You know, I never really felt scared for his life until probably the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, and, you know, they say as far as his riches go, nobody exactly knew. It could have been $50 million to over $1 billion at any given time of how much money.
There was a montage where he was saying, he was like, I made $8 million doing this. I made $2-something million doing this. I made millions.
Yeah.
He made millions.
Yeah, he ran out of space in his backyard.
to bury the money. That's what bank accounts are for.
So
that's what private accounts in the Cayman Islands are for.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, like, okay, so Pablo asked the cartel was asking him to do this, but he never told the government what he was doing. So he, talk about the biggest double dipper. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't tell Monty going, hey, Monty, I have this issue here. Like, I couldn't say no.
He was kind of like a double agent.
Sort of, you know. And then it was like, well, you're going to pick up some Contras. Oh, and we're borrowing some of your airfield here because we're going to train these people. He's like, is that legal? He's like, do you have a problem with that? He's like, no, boss. Whatever you say. I'm not going to tip the apple cart.
It'd be like pot calling the kettle black when he's doing illegal things at the same time.
And the way that I sort of too saw the movie is that the government sort of kind of knew. I mean, when he got arrested,
They bailed him out. Right.
And it was like, oh, well. And again, it was, well, Barry, you can spend the rest of your life here in this rundown jail in Colombia, or you can do this.
You can still work for us.
I'll do that. Well, of course he would do that.
Yeah. But that's also because he was just so good, they needed him.
He was very good.
Despite what he was doing, he was extremely good.
Yep. So I just found that it's very interesting because in reading press notes and everything, they made it appear as if he was really a willing participant. Like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, they just asked him and he just said yes. Mm-hmm. Where I just felt that the movie gave us sort of something a little bit different, that, yeah, he did it willingly, but there was a price. Like, if you don't do it, you're going to jail for smuggling Cuban cigars. If you don't do it,
you're
going to prison.
Or you die. Right. Like, from the government, it was like, you do this for us, you're going to prison.
Right.
For the cartels, it's like, you do this for us or we'll kill you.
Right.
You know?
So, yeah, that's, I guess, what I was getting at. So I'm glad I wasn't the only one. Obviously, he was an active participant. He was thrilled to death.
Because either way, he benefited in both ways.
All of the money.
Because CIA was giving him all the necessary things to pull it off, such as runways and the planes. They were giving him the materials to do it. And then the cartels were giving him the money to keep doing it.
Right. Absolutely.
So he was benefiting everybody.
Wait a minute. I'm just trying to read some of the comments. You grew up on a Boston critic?
Someone's calling me out for being a Boston Celtics fan. Hey. Hey now.
That's
I will talk to you about Boston Celtics on Twitter, not on this show.
That's really funny. That's really funny. But that's funny that they
How come an Illinois lady is growing up and cheering on the Boston Celtics? It's a long story, but I digress.
I actually think it's funny that you're paying attention. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the camera work. Cesar Charlones was the DP on this, right? And he made his movie magic using an Alexa XT and Alexa M cameras. And to him, the Alexa M had a tiny camera body and is tethered to the hardware of the gear by a 40-foot cable. And that allowed for the camera to have freedom of movement as in a documentary style that Lyman preferred for the tone of the story. And I totally got that style, but yet I never looked at the movie as a documentary. Does that make sense?
At first, you know, because of the beginning of the movie, how they set it up, you're watching...
Right.
Cruise, you're watching Barry tell us a story via VHS tapes.
Right.
So you actually naturally get a film style narrative.
Right.
But then as we actually watch him go about his day to day life, it becomes more of just a movie narrative.
Right.
Compared to a documentary style narrative.
I thought it was a good style that Lyman worked with. Because he's a I got very
over the
good
it took me a while to get over the shaky camera.
Did it?
Yeah, it did.
Huh. It didn't bother me.
There were some parts that it was very jarring.
Yeah. You've mentioned that in other movies.
This is not the first time I'm talking about that.
So, but I want to talk, too, because the DP, he could see his frame by wearing something called Zeiss Cinemizer old glasses that showed what the camera is seeing. Hmm. So he was able to... Because he couldn't be with the camera.
Talk about modern technology.
Isn't that cool?
That is.
So then during post-production, then the colorist had his job. They had to give a distinct look and feel to the different years the film covers, from Barry in the beginning of his journey through his fully evolved life as a of a criminal and the flying sequences and such. And so I just really thought that all of this is, like, again, modern technology to make a movie look older.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And I think Hollywood has come so far with their technology to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, I know I said that, like, of Ouija Origin of Evil, where they actually put in real change dots on the digital film. Mm. But it doesn't take you out of a movie like this because you still feel that you're in the late 70s, early 80s.
And I also think
it's not that flashy,
the
right?
Color, scheme of this movie definitely felt like the 70s and 80s during that time. It was very warm, warmish color tints, especially when we were down in quote-unquote Columbia.
Right.
And then when we were back in the hometown, like, there was an 80s style feel to the movie that you can see in other actual 80s films.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so they got the look right. The aesthetics of it definitely said 80s.
Right. And the other cool thing about this movie is that it did travel a little bit. It was filmed here primarily in the States, but they did some of the elements. They did film in Colombia in August of 2015. And they had to shoot all over the country in very remote airstrips. Colombia doubled for where the drug cartels' airstrips were. It had such an amazing, varied terrain. Events happened everywhere from Panama, Nicaragua to Costa Rica. We ended up traveling all around Colombia in an armada of small airplanes. So I think that that's pretty cool. Lyman and Cruz catch this desire to teach as much filmmaking knowledge as possible to the hardworking Colombia crew, many of who lived in Bogota. So they imparted... So they took on this crew.
So even when they were down there, they were imparting their wisdom and knowledge.
Which I think...
They were still giving back to the community, just education.
And these people were working on the film. And I just, again, when I read this sort of thing, it's really cool that these people don't have this opportunity to work on this type of a production. And there they are. Each of the American department heads embraced the opportunity to share their tools and craft with these people. And that's how you get more film enthusiasts from around the world, obviously. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that. So, it's just really cool. So on August 24th, Cruz, Lyman, North, and his aerial team flew the Aerostar to the Amazon basin of the country. They camped overnight in the area. Now, apparently, the production did not want them to go flying. They didn't want them to go there because of tigers. They didn't want them to go to the jungle.
Yeah, they did. Just the physical terrain was...
Telling that to Tom Cruise is like, that pretty much says...
Well, let's
do it, Doug.
And Doug's that sounds like, sure. Awesome.
That sounds great. I don't want you to climb that wall, Tom. Let's do it. I don't want you to hang off of the wing of that plane, Tom.
Not only am I going to climb the wall, I'm going to pull the wall over it. You know, that's what Tom Cruise would do.
Yeah, I think just if you don't want him to do something, just don't bring it up.
Right.
So, Tom, you should really do this. Nah, that wall's
great,
too high.
But that's a great idea.
And they stayed overnight. Production much to, like, they must have been having a cow. But good for them. I go for the realism. I definitely go for the camaraderie on the set and the collaboration that they were going through. I think they did a really good job in the way that this movie looked, sounded, and it gave me that feel that I was in the 70s, 80s. I thought it was a lot of fun. Well, maybe 84 American made. So I was just trying to, again, read... let's see. There we go. I'm just trying to see. Oh, there we go.
84 or 82 American made. Like the year and what it looked like?
Yeah, it was definitely, I was in, I want to say high school, maybe. I don't want to date myself, but actually I should date myself. It'd be the only dates that I could get. Boom. Anyways, so let's talk a little bit about, if we want to, let's talk a little bit fact and fiction of this movie. Because, again, we sat here, we talked about many movies that were based on a true story. We had the director of The 33 on.
We did.
Just recently we had, I forget what movie we just recently did that was based
on.
Detroit. Yeah, we were just talking about Detroit, based on a true story. And in all of these movies, you sort of have to take a grain of salt, folks, because they're not necessarily, it's not a documentary. Things have to be made up. And I usually don't mind that. It just depends on how it is. There was that Matthew McConaughey movie where it actually really pissed me off because they really sold that as this is as true as it gets. You remember the one we talked about it on this panel here? I just forget what it was. And they completely, they made up a character who is not only a doctor but a love interest. And that character had impact on that person's life. And that character never existed. That bothered me. So why don't we talk about, we can talk about some of the fact and fiction of this movie. So he really was a commercial pilot for TWA. And he didn't leave as much as, he actually was fired.
Dallas Buyers Club. Yes, thank you.
Dallas Buyers Club. Thank you very much.
I have it queued up here on my IMDb, Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I know which one. It's not Mud.
Thank you.
It's Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, and we did talk about Dunkirk, and that was another another true story that happened.
Done
that
a lot of Nolan, like,
yeah,
real
we do.
Life
we try to cover movies. It all. So was he recruited while he worked for the CIA, for TWA? Yep, yep, pretty much. He was recruited, but
and,
he was...
Go oh, ahead. Yeah, please. Also that there's been a lot of stories out there saying that because it is kind of historically inaccurate, because Barry Seal was actually 10 years younger than what Tom Cruise is portraying him. So all this happened to a younger version, a younger person.
Yeah, and all I can say is, and by the ways, I have all our links, all our information is online, so you can download it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you can... see our thoughts, our opinions, and our links. We include our links. And there's a great link that I'm using called historyversehollywood.com.
There you go.
And that's where we have this. And it has a lot of that stuff. But here's my point to that. If you look at the real Barry Seal compared to Tom Cruise, and you're a movie executive, you go with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, Tom Cruise.
But
better.
He, because, yeah.
But also, they said Barry Seal in real life got overconfident and cocky to the point where he was actually cocky that he would brag to his friends and family that he was making so much money and by doing his quote unquote jobs and stuff. Like he would flash off his actual rewards. And that got him in trouble.
Yeah.
Like he audibly made it public of what he was doing.
Yeah.
And that's going to catch up with you.
So another interesting fact about Barry Seal is that he actually met Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah.
And an interesting fact we learned while researching the true story was that while training for the Civil Air Patrol in Baton Rouge, Barry Seal met President John F. Kennedy's assassin. That's crazy. So we talked about Barry's marriage. And he was, in fact, married three times. Now, I understand sticking to one. That doesn't bother me. I mean, it's for clarity. It's for not making this movie more confusing or adding more characters. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I can understand that. But I honestly, I wasn't bothered by it because there were just so many people who were in Barry's life that helped him do whatever he needed to do in his job. Yeah, he's going to have some run-ins with the law, but I think Lee Harvey Oswald, it's not really he's not the main story.
Right, and to me, not having three wives makes it a shorter, more efficient movie, but it doesn't affect the outcome of the story.
Yeah, it's like they didn't change, they changed things that happened in between or exactly... how one came to be, but the outcomes were still the same.
Yeah, and it's just because it said that Barry didn't deal directly with Pablo Escobar. Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand it. I get it.
In this movie, they were friends.
But it makes it more interesting. I mean, I would rather see Barry with Pablo Escobar. It makes more cinematic storytelling sense. And again, it doesn't affect the outcome other than Barry dealing with a lackey that says he works for Pablo Escobar. What fun is that, really?
Right. You know? And it kind of just shows on a more human level of how rooted he was with people.
Right.
The fact that he was personal friends with someone.
Right.
Has a deeper emotional impact when something actually happens afterwards in the house.
Yeah.
And it has a bigger aftermath when it's someone more personal.
I mean, he brought his wife down.
Exactly.
To a party.
Like, he had.
And a bullfight.
He had his wife throughout the entire movie. And then when they were seizing everything, right. It was more emotional and more realistic.
Absolutely.
Of someone else going through this. This is what you're losing. When he screwed over the cartels, he lost personal friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a bigger personal stake.
Yeah, absolutely.
In all of
this. Yeah, I agree. And it's one of those things. It doesn't affect the outcome. And he's not having a conversation with fictional people who affect his life, in a sense. So, just like, he actually, in real life, had 5 kids instead of 3.
Yeah, from 3 different marriages.
Yeah.
The kids...
Whatever.
Do you remember anything that the kids said?
No, I didn't remember that brother, though.
Yeah, freaking JD. Yeah. But again, there's, like, not to sound terrible, but, like, the people, like, the sons, or, like, the kids... And whatnot, like, they literally added nothing to the story.
No.
So it's okay if there could have been 10 of them. They didn't do anything.
No.
You know, so is actually very forgivable.
So, something else that was interesting, the movie was originally titled Mena at the town.
At the town.
So it refers to the small town in Arkansas that Barry Seal moved his operation under the nose of then Governor Bill Clinton. So the movie's title was changed to put less emphasis on the Arkansas connection, including possibility that Bill was aware of what's going on. Mm. I actually think American Made is a much better title.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Totally. Because it shows this wasn't... Mena just feels like, right. What the hell is Mena? You know, no one is going to know what Mena is. But when you put American on it, you know, it's a broader term that... It's like, oh, something's happening in the country.
Right, right.
Compared to what's happening in a small town.
Exactly. The other thing that I know is bummed to find out that this really didn't happen, but, the zero gravity love scene didn't really happen. It was filmed for the movie.
It was filmed for artistic pleasure. Now,
so here's the thing. So the scene was actually inspired by something that happened while Doug Liman and Tom Cruise were training for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He did all his flying, and he put the airplane in a parabolic arc, and it pinned me against the ceiling. And right at that moment, I had this inspiration. Like, love is in the air.
Not involving sex.
I've never seen Entrance into the Mile High Club done so... artfully. And so,
it's fun. It's not the first time we've seen it in films either. Like, we know just how they filmed Apollo 13 years ago. Like the whole parabolic arc.
No, I get it.
Might as well use it.
The way that it was done, it was like going, that's really funny. As everything's like, because that's really funny. Kudos to Doug Liman.
That's gotta hurt.
It's something, well, it's, yeah. But it was just really, I found it to be...
But again,
it's
like moments like this when you know Tom Cruise is just being Tom Cruise and not Barry Seal.
Right.
Yeah.
And
this is when he's just having fun.
So it's funny that you say that, because another question is, was Barry Seal as likable as Tom Cruise? And the answer was sort of kind of yes. He had that gregarious personality about him. That's how he was able to get these various jobs. And the filmmakers were shooting the movie. Barry stole an airplane from it. Catch this. While the filmmakers were shooting the movie in South America, a local pilot who was working with them said he had met Barry, and when asked how, he said, oh, Barry stole an airplane from me. He just took it out for a test flight and never came back, because it turns out Barry flew the plane all the way back to the United States. And the guy said, yeah, whatever. He was a great guy. Loved him. Stole a plane from me.
That's like, hey, borrow my car and never gave it back.
Yeah, it's like I let Tom Cruise borrow my plane and son of a bitch never gave it back. But he's Tom Cruise, and so hey. So I think that's really funny, even though they really did not look alike. At all.
The real Barry Seal was heavier in physical appearance and younger in age.
Yeah. So I want to talk about...
But that's also because this movie was filmed. Like, the people were sticking up for Tom Cruise, why he didn't change his appearance. If he's an actor, you change your appearance for something. But this was also filmed around the time of Jack Reacher and Mission Impossible. He has to be in physical shape.
Sure. Yeah, I get it. And if you look at the real Barry Seal, you know, you go, okay, yeah, this is... I'll go with Tom Cruise. Now, it's interesting because I did bring up at then Governor Bill Clinton of Arkansas. And he had more... His name was mentioned in the movie. And again, I found to be a very funny scene when he was brought in to court. And he's out on the bench. And he's like, guys, you ever driven a Cadillac before? It's in the trailer. And... I thought that was a real funny scene. He goes, well, because I'm going to walk out of here. And so then we're in the office of the chief of police. And it's, Governor Clinton's on the line. Wait. Okay. Click. So he, according to the movie, had some influence and knew what was going on. But they actually had a scene. The filmmakers decided to cut a scene showing a young Clinton getting a lap dance at an Arkansas strip club.
Oof.
So,
like, we need more conspiracy for American presidents.
Yeah. So in the script, it's the moment when the movie's real-life protagonist hatches an idea to enlist Clinton, who was then governor of Arkansas in the CIA-backed scheme. So the scene was nixed from Gary Spinelli's script, because the producer, financer Cross Creek Pictures, wanted to keep the film from being political. Like, smart movie.
Because I think that would have overshadowed the person.
I think what you initially said, too, is right on the money. No need, in spite of what's going on today.
We don't need more governmental conspiracies.
Like, it's one thing to document history in a movie, like Iran-Contra. I get that.
Right.
It's another, when you're doing something like that, we don't need that right now. Mm-hmm. Smart move.
It degrades the image of Bill Clinton, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in I a just, way.
Yeah. And I just thought that was, it was
I think
a
that's
smart
smart.
Move.
Stay away from that. No one wants to watch that.
Yeah, no. And again, we both at the top of the show said, I think it's really impressive that I didn't know about this history yet. It played such an integral part to our 80s history.
Right. And I also enjoy the moment where Barry interacted with the young George Bush.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, hello. I see you.
I see. And then he hides back. Yeah, that was a funny scene. I really thought that was funny. So the other thing that was interesting to me in this movie is, so Barry, one of his final things, he needs to take pictures for the government.
Mm-hmm.
This movie had a pose under Oliver North. He was taking pictures, and he was in these pictures. And the government, according to this movie, was Oliver North. They leaked the pictures.
Yeah.
Which was basically the beginning of the end for Barry here. He understood. Now, I want to ask you this. My first instinct was, why aren't they putting him in, like, witness? They know what this is going to... They pretty much said, you're on your own, buddy. Sorry.
But
that
also,
sucks.
I think there was also a moment where they they talked to Barry. Like, you know what you signed up for. Yeah.
They said that, but at the same time... Well, here's the difference between fact and fiction. Apparently... Author Del Hahn, he's a former FBI agent, and he wrote this book called Smuggler's End, The Life and Death of Barry Seal.
Barry Seal, yeah.
Seal actually thought he was smarter and cleverer than the founding families of the cartel. He was offered a protective custody, and he turned it down. Not the smartest move.
Also, because if you're under protective custody, you can't do your everyday job.
Understood.
Which he loves.
I get that. I do, but man, oh, but do I do that? Or the gig is up.
Right.
The way the way that American made the movie is, it looked like the government just said, tough luck, guy.
You're sorry. On your own. Thanks for, by the way, thanks for doing this for us.
Thanks for everything, because you helped us.
Right.
Yeah, we have all this. Oh, and look what, now it's done.
But now we're done with you.
Yeah, we're done with you, and good luck on your own out there. Which, right there and then, that is when you knew.
Yeah, exactly. The moment where we saw Schaefer turn on him, and he's like, burn everything that has any connection to him, I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah, and
he's done.
And on top of that,
when you take away that security blanket,
right?
Yeah, you're done.
So you knew eventually, like, Pablo Escobar, they actually show, they were pissed, they were double-crossed, and you knew, okay, and then he sends his guys up. He was tragically, unfortunately, assassinated in a parking lot of a
Salvation Army halfway house.
Yep. I was surprised they didn't go after the family. But if he was married to three wives, I don't know what his family situation would have been in real life. But it's still sad. Now, the other thing that they didn't touch on in the movie, in reality, is that they caught the three guys that assassinated him in real life.
Yeah, they did. Two, 3 days later, they actually caught the guys who were responsible for it. So it was resolved quickly.
Yeah. Again, you sort of saw it coming. But in the framework of the movie, you know, like I said, it had that Sunset Boulevard narrative, which I really appreciated in this movie. You know, and because the movie's narrated to us, who ends up being a dead guy. Thus ends the story of Barry Seal. But it was entertaining. It was historical. I found it to be a very solid movie, particularly coming at the time of year that it came in.
It felt like an end of a summer movie.
Sure. Yeah. But it didn't feel like a dump. Because this is far too good to be a dump. So why don't we talk a little bit about... Let's talk about its reception and its box office and what it means to how it's been doing. I think it's done okay. They may have wanted a little bit more, but as of October 5th, it's done $22.3 million. We're looking at opening weekend.
Foreign is around like $67 million.
Which is 74%. Which
that's when huge. And this is it, a. I mean, they were dealing with Colombia. They were dealing with Iran. And this is a geographical type of movie. He's constantly flying between multiple countries.
Yeah, 74% of its gross came in from foreign territories. I actually think too, in a big part, that's Tom Cruise. That's what he
has a big international pull as well.
Because when you even look at the grosses of The Mummy,
huge
overseas, huge. I mean, because here it's opening weekend, it did $16.7 million. It came in at number three, 3,000 locations, not too shabby, $50 million production budget, which, you know what? That movie looked great for $50 million.
Yeah,
like compared to some blockbusters. $50 million is relatively cheap in the hands of, especially like when you look at their last pairing, which is Edge of Tomorrow, right? Even when you look at The Mummy, $50 million. This movie looked
great.
Those
were high production value. That took a lot more visual effects for those movies.
True.
And this one, I feel like a lot of the money went into the actual production, like the planes that they needed to acquire for this. But there was only maybe a fleet of planes, and that's it.
Yeah, and it looked high production.
And they redressed a lot of things, so, I mean, great for them. They really put their money.
Yeah, I really... This is
very creative things.
And I think part of that, too, is because when you think Tom Cruise, you don't necessarily think independent movie, right? You think high production. You think production value. This movie had production value. It looked great. It looked really good. The way in which it was edited and the way it moved, it looked really good. So then we go Rotten Tomatoes. Its reception amongst critics is 87%.
87%.
Which I think is far better than The Mummy.
Yeah. I mean, that's fairly high.
That's really good. It's that's like it's a higher. B plus. It's 80%, and it gets a B plus in CinemaScore. So this is one of the rare occasions where critics and audiences are sort of kind of on the same page, right?
87 is a B plus,
right? And B plus to me is a fair grade. I think if I'm going.
I think so.
If I'm going by a letter
Admittedly,
grade.
There was a moment while I was watching this film, I was like, wow, this is a long film.
Yeah, and it's just, it's not necessarily 2 hours.
Yeah, it felt like a long film because so much was happening.
Yeah, a lot happens in this movie. And so I think the marketing on it, too, I thought the marketing was really good on this movie.
I saw the trailer probably, I kid you not, 20 times.
Yeah, like, I saw it a lot.
They did the
song in the trailer. I don't know who it is, but it worked really well for the trailer and the marketing of this movie. And the way that they did it too is because they your favorite line in the movie in the trailer they stop it is shoot the gringos,
shoot the gringos,
and it still frames and it goes to Tom Cruise going, it gets crazier from here. Like, it does.
We're like,
wow,
what else could happen?
Yeah. They did, Universal did a really good job, I felt, in marketing this movie. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to Doug Liman and Tom Cruise's next collaboration, which I believe is the sequel to Edge of Tomorrow. So I look forward to that. I think that those are
and
two
Tom Cruise
together.
Is also working on Maverick.
Yep.
There is a sequel to Top Gun.
Yeah, I forget who's directing that one, but he works well with
Tom's
Liman.
Tom's busy.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we can't get a sequel to this one because Barry Seal's dead, so.
Yeah. Yes, he is. But I do like when he works with Doug Liman. I like it when he works with Steven Spielberg.
I would easily take an Edge of Tomorrow sequel.
Me too.
Not that we need it, but I would watch it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thought the first one was so underappreciated in the year that it came out. It's such a good movie.
So good. And we also talked to Christoph Beck.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
During that Anatomy.
Yeah.
Who also did the music for this. So so even Christoph and Doug Liman have a working relationship.
Absolutely. And they work really well. And you can tell when they have that communication going. They don't have to explain things. They just know what's needed. And the music in this movie was pretty good, too. From score to various 80s, you got the feel of this movie. You got the history of the movie. They didn't overuse video clip footage. Like when they went to like Oliver North. They didn't overuse that, which I found to be pretty good. Because sometimes when they heavily rely on that, it takes away sometimes.
That's what like Detroit did a lot.
Sometimes,
the beginning, middle, and end was all like, let's go to the real footage of the actual event.
Yeah.
And they played it out for like a solid 5 minutes every single time.
Yeah.
And I mean, they used it as a transitional point, but not as a storytelling point.
Yeah. No, I liked its use here. I think, you know, again, top marks too for its production value and how it was put together. Everybody, I think, really did a good job.
I think there's a rewatchability factor to this
I think so too. I think, yeah, absolutely. And I think it'll still be as fun. You know, will I own it? I don't know. But I would definitely rewatch it again. I would have like if a friend said, hey, I hadn't seen this and I've seen everything else, I'd go see this again. It's a fun movie. So, I think we should probably, I think it's time to wrap up. I just wanted to say thank you very much. I enjoyed this movie more than most movies this year and watched it as a comedy, says Jonas Tiger. You know, it was in part, I think, marketed almost as a comedy too. Like, because there were comedic moments in that trailer that it showed. And, yeah, it's a historical dramedy. I don't know. Because there was some drama. There was comedy in it.
There was more action and comedy than there was drama.
Yeah. So, but I'm glad you enjoyed the movie. I hope you enjoyed us talking about it and talking about you. So, thank you. Thank you very much for being online, Jonas. It's actually a pleasure when we have somebody online who's making thoughtful comments and enjoys to be part of the discussion. You can continue to be part of the discussion. If you watch us on YouTube, you can comment. Maybe there's something that we missed, or maybe there's something that you liked that we didn't talk about. Please, by all means, bring it up. We'll write you back. I know, we do. We're actually pretty good about that. We pay attention. We've got so many more movies in the upcoming weeks. Of course, the big one next week will be Blade Runner 2049. I saw it last night. And I can't wait to talk about it because, much like the original Blade Runner, I think it could very well be very divisive. I think we could have really good conversation.
Forewarning, drink coffee before you watch it.
And we'll talk about runtime because it's 2 hours and 40 minutes. If I can impart anything to you and to our viewers who may not have seen it yet, two things. First, there are 3 short films that were made specifically for the movie. Watch them. They're like a prologue that bridge the gap from the original Blade Runner to Blade Runner 2049. They're really well done, and they're not frivolously done. My second advice to you when going out, see it in the biggest, largest, best possible screen that you can. Whether it be IMAX or a Cinemark XD, go large on this movie. Even if you don't like it, you won't regret seeing it in that format because it is beautiful.
And then we'll talk about it next week.
I can't wait. I'm just imparting.
Yeah, you're very excited.
I just want you to try to see it in the best possible venue possible. And I can't wait to talk about it with you folks and with you. And Phil, we missed you today, Phil. We really did. Phil got comments on his pitching. Remember last week he did the pitch? But we got that in there too.
Right.
Somebody commented and loved that. So we
missed
you today,
Phil.
Someone
liked the fact that went off on Elton John too. So. Every once in a while, you guys.
Every now and then. So in any case, we do thank you. We do this for you folks. So join us next week. Can't wait. Have a great week. We'll see you at the movies. Bye, Marissa. Thank you.
Bye, Dimitri. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk. From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Spitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit PopcornTalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. I'll take another. It seems like a mother.